I'm sorry, but I don't speak French. In America, they tell me that I have a French accent, so maybe it will be easier. I always, the moment Jean-Jacques asked me, invited me to come and speak, and I accepted the invitation, talking about art in human evolution. And then I got kind of panic because what can a guy from the dusty Middle East give a lecture in Paris about art? Nevertheless, I took the challenge and I start with a very important figure, a German zoologist by the name of Ernst Haeckel. Ernst Haeckel was a famous zoologist, one of the greatest supporters of Darwin, and because of the fantastic importance that he has in Europe, he actually helped the Darwinian theory at the beginning in a very important way. I think he is an important figure because of a different thing. He did something that is unprecedented in biology. He gave a name to a creature that was never found before. He called it Pithecanthropus, which means half monkey, half human. Midway between monkey and a human. This is a very strange practice. And when we think about what actually he did a prediction. And this is why it's so important. He made a prediction and if you can make a prediction, it makes the theory into a scientific theory. Now, if indeed Darwin is right, we don't say he is right, but if he is right, the prediction tells us the deeper we go in the strata, the deeper we go in time, we should see that human gives up the modern anatomy and slowly, slowly turns into a monkey. And not only that he gave a name, but he asked an artist, he was a very flamboyant guy, and he asked an artist to draw and to paint Pithecanthropus. And this is the very famous picture of Pithecanthropus. It was drawn by a guy named Gabriel Max, apparently a very important artist. And it's very interesting what's happening here. You can see a creature that is, in all its systems, is half the way between a monkey and a human. We can see, first of all, that this gentleman is standing barely upright. We can see that the knees are not locked, they are bent. We can see that the skull is not a modern human, and it's not a very primitive monkey, because the brain capacity is rather big, and the prognathism or the protrusion of the snout is not as dramatic as an ape. More important, when we measure the length of the arms and the legs, we see it's the same proportion. This, of course, echoes something that was very already known in times of Darwin and Haeckel. They all knew that monkey has a longer arm, or apes, they have longer arms and shorter legs. We are the other way around, and apparently these proportions are echoing this debate in early stages of human evolution. Now, the lady is also very interesting. I mean, first of all, it's a beautiful lady and with blonde hair, and she looks like Brigitte Bardot. And this is very interesting because when I tell the story or tell the joke to my young students, nobody knows who I'm talking about. So at least I have, in French, I have the response. But what I want to show you is to draw your attention to is the fact that the big toe is unlike the big toe in our own foot. It's kind of diverging. It's not like diverging like a chimp, but certainly not like us. We can see it here very clearly that it's half the way. So what we see here is actually a presentation of Haeckel's concept of pithecanthropus, which means a creature that is half away or the ideal missing link. I'll have some water. Well, Haeckel left us with a unfortunate legacy, actually a terrible legacy, that we should expect in human evolution a creature that is really intermediate or halfway in all its systems, which is very, very wrong. And it influenced many generations, and especially the popular media, because what we see here is the very famous chain of life, you know, of evolution. And there is something here that is the pithecanthropus with all its anatomical systems. I always wonder, what is the stage here in human evolution, you know, flying in mid-air? This is a very popular thing, and I use, as part of my hobbies, I use collect these cartoons. But now, in 5 minutes, you go to Google and you have about 200,000 of these images. So I'll give you some more examples. You know, pithecanthropus somewhere here, and pithecanthropus somewhere here, and pithecanthropus even somewhere here. Okay, so several years ago, I was invited to Leipzig, and Leipzig is not far from Jena, and Jena is where actually Ernst Haeckel was living, and there is a beautiful museum, Villa Mendoza, that is his own house, and I asked to be taken to this and to see. After many years that I'm teaching and showing this image, I want to see the original. So I went to Jena, and I was treated fantastically. And here I was introduced to his study. His death mask is on the desk. And as a matter of fact, I was handling even his skull, okay? I was given his skull. And lo and behold, after many, many years, I was standing in front of this beautiful painting in his study. Now, the painting, as I mentioned before, is made by I never heard about him before, but apparently a famous artist, Max Gabriel Max, and this is the guy. And when I went and checked some of his work, it's really beautiful stuff. Really, I was astonished. This is a rhesus monkey looking at a skeleton of a baby chimps, and it's really fantastic. And there is another painting, also Gabriel Max, and is hanging in the Metropolitan. So apparently, he was recognized as a very important artist. But, and with this concept, I have to say, oh, I'm sorry. With this concept, I have to say that I was very disappointed because the picture itself is not as good as I expected from all his painting. And all I can imagine is that Haeckel, that was a very dominant and flamboyant guy, was standing behind Gabriel Max and changing it again and again and fixing all kind of things. And this is why the picture, spectacular as it is, it's not as beautiful as all other pictures. Ernst Haeckel had a very enthusiastic student, and of course, this is Eugene Dubois. He was a Dutch medical doctor, military doctor, and he wanted to actually find Peter Cantropus, which was an amazing challenge at the time. And he went because Ernst Haeckel, his teacher, was sure that the orangutan or the gibbon are the closest relatives of human, and they are in the Far East. As a devoted student, Eugene Dubois went to Indonesia and Sumatra. Part of it was practical things because it was a colony of Holland at that time. And indeed, after a lot of adventures, he found this skull cup and the femur, and he reconstructed Peter Cantropus. Now, this is what he found, okay? This is the only thing he found. But the whole thing is reconstructed as Peter Cantropus, as something that is between an ape and a human. The brain capacity is small, but bigger than an ape. Very prognathous, but not as prognathous as an ape. Of course, no chin. And you can see that the teeth, especially the canines, are interlocking one of the other. Just to show you that, or to make an important point, people actually, with a notion that existed at that time, and people couldn't actually accept that a modern femur is part of this creature, and they refused to recognize it as belonging to the skull. And this is why Eugene Dubois made a very important point, or very decisive point, showing that the femur and the skull were found at the same thing. But here we see, for the first time, we see something that actually is not the perfect Pithecanthropus. It's not a creature that, with all his system, anatomical system, is midway. So, and somebody will tell me how much I have, I don't know. What?
15 minutes.
Oh, okay. So, with all this background, I would like to take you to a 3.5 million years ago, which is, today we know, it's a chronological midpoint between the common ancestor of chimps and us and modern human. I'm taking you there, first of all, because it is the midpoint, the archaeological midpoint. And the second thing is, for the last 35 years, I'm involved with the sediments and with the fossils that are found at this age in Ethiopia. And I will introduce you to some of the fossils. Some of these slides are actually from my dissertation. So I'm talking about 200 years ago, okay? And you can see that we are talking about a fossil or a fossil that is 3.5 million years, and I compared it to a chimp. We are looking at the back of the skull, and we see that they are incredibly similar. First of all, the brain capacity is identical. It's about 500 cc for both. Such a brain capacity makes the skull looks like a bell shape when you look at it from the back. And even if you zoom in, as the young students say, if you zoom in into anatomical details, you can see the scars of the muscles of mastication reaching the top of the skulls here and here. Now, in less formal lectures in medical school, the students are very informal. Always somebody jumps and say, "Well, maybe what you found is a chimp. How do you know it's a hominid?" Okay, it's a good question, where you can see the difference, a very important difference between these two. In a posterior view, in a view from the back, we can see that the whole nuchal region is exposed in a chimp, and we cannot see it, but in this view, we can see also that the foramen magnum, this is the opening where the brain is attached to the spinal cord, is facing you. And in the fossil, we see that the whole nuchal area is underneath, and there is no way that we can see in this view the foramen magnum. The foramen magnum facing backwards just tells us that the vertebral column is actually parallel to the ground, which means it's not a biped. Here we are talking about a biped. And this is the idea. I told you I'm not a big artist. You can see the difference between these two. So what we see, what actually we see a chimp. The skull of a chimp that is walking upright. And I cannot help bragging about the fact I found the skull. And you can see it's a chimp. And the other specimen, this one is a big male of Australopithecus afarensis. And this is the female. And I mean, this is not the skull of Lucy. Lucy has no skull, but we suspect that Lucy looked very much like this. So what do we see? We see a creature that is with a small brain capacity that looks very much like a chimp, but when we examine the pelvis, we can see the pelvis is a completely different thing. It's not an intermediate, okay? It's a character state that is very close to us. This is a chimp, this is human, and this is the famous Lucy. Now, this, of course, is my dear friend Don Johansson, and this is Lucy, and one of the most spectacular things about the skeleton of Lucy was the fact that when you measure the arms and the legs, you see they are the same length, okay? This is the only point that Haeckel was right in his reconstruction. So another very important discovery, this is in Tanzania in the mid-70s, Mary Leakey and her team discovered a trail of footprints, probably Australopithecus afarensis. And what we can see here, two individuals walking left, right, left, right, left, right, and so on. And the other one is a much smaller individual, left, right, left, right, left, right, and so on. But when you examine the footprint itself, you can see, my goodness, this is a modern looking footprint. You can see that the big toe is actually with all the others. The the longitudinal arc is very much like ours, and the transverse arc is very much like ours. So in other words, it's not the Pithecanthropus that Haeckel was suggesting. These are also old pictures from my dissertation, and I simply took the fossil, I cut a skull of a chimpanzee. Today we don't do these things, and you put it together, and it's an amazing thing how it's almost like taken from the same specimen. It's just a chimp. But when you look at the dentition, you see what looks a minor thing, but it's a very significant one. You can see here that there is a large gap between the canine and the front teeth, and you see a very small one in afarensis. This tells us a very important thing, that unlike a chimp and unlike a human, afarensis, the chimp has the upper and lower canine kind of interlocking, and the space that I was pointed out is actually to enable the interlocking. And when you go to the fossil, it's an amazing thing. It is an intermediate. With the dentition, it is an intermediate. I mean, Haeckel and Darwin, in their wildest dream, didn't imagine something like this. This is a canine that every one of us has. This is a chimp, and this is afarensis just in the middle. So where actually I'm heading? You can arrange a movie with brain capacity that looks fantastically gradual, and the increase is really very well documented. But this is only the brain. Other anatomical system, they developed in a different rate. And there is no way even to expect that selective pressure is affecting all of them at the same time. So here we have brain capacity that is, wow. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking too much or too fast. Okay. Yeah. So where am I? We can have a fantastic sequence of brain capacity, but when we go to the locomotion system, it's a different thing. When we go to the dentition, it's a different thing. So we can arrange these movies, but each system has a different movie of its own. Thank you.